to the Nerdentials Podcast, starring your hosts, Joe Tweedy, Matthew Johnson, Nick Thomas, and Lynn Dudgeon.
Welcome to Nerdentials, your weekly dose of the nerdy essentials covering film, TV, video games, and comic books. I'm your host, Joe Tweeden. And today, joining me in the nerd cave is the Lynn Dudgeon and the Nick Thomas.
Woot woot.
I got one woot woot and a silent dudgeon.
Yeah.
Hi, Lynn.
Hi. Heidi ho, dear neighbor.
Oh, snap. He pulled a Heidi ho on us.
Who you calling a hoe?
Not sure if I should be concerned or excited. Well, guys, how has the rest of the week been up to this point? And yes, Nick, I am inviting you to a personal story. As opposed to the previous week. No, nothing to share?
What do you mean?
Oh, last time I was being super friendly, and then you started going on about classes and work and stuff, and then I cracked a joke at you saying, "Oh, I see. You thought that I was giving you a personal invitation to story time."
This week has been fun. A lot of work, a lot of school. I actually missed a few days because my wife and kids were sick.
Oh, snap. Like,
Diflucus the blowhole kind of sick.
Dude, it's been a while since you've mentioned that illness. Is it in resurgence?
Apparently. But yeah, it was interesting couple days. But there were some bright lights on the horizon. I did not know this beforehand when we were going through most anticipated games of 2019. And if I would have known this, I would have said it.
Said what?
September 2019. Mech Warriors 5, Mercenaries.
Well, shit. He's already jumped into the conversation, guys.
That's all right.
Quick segue. Lynn, how's your week been? That exciting?
It's been a week.
All right. Well, fair enough. Guys, my week has been pretty standard and busy as well. But we've had a handful of exciting games that we've jumped into this week. And speaking of games, guys, let's kick things off with our gaming bits for the week. All right, guys, you know the drill. This is Gaming Bits. We're about to hit up a few hot topics. On a quick side note, just remember, if you guys are listening to us on audio, you can find us on iTunes or Google Play. And if you're watching video or not watching video, the video can be found on youtube.com/C/Nerdentials. And all these things can be found at one fancy location known as nerdentialsmedia.com. Amen, brother. Amen. There it is. Guys, anyway, that was the anyway, that was it. Let's jump into games, guys. On a quick note, we are going to talk about a few hot topics. We're going to discuss the Resident Evil 2 remake. We're going to talk about the state of Destiny 2, the game. And we'll talk about the crazy, crazy game known as Anthem. That being said, let's jump into the first thing that's fresh and not so controversial. One that's been fairly enjoyable to most of us here. I guess I can't speak for Matt or Nick, but I'm pretty sure Matt's having fun with it right now. Guys, we're going to quickly talk about Resident Evil 2, the remake from the classic Resident Evil 2. Yes, the same name that came out back in 1998. 1998. Man, 20 years later, we have gotten a remake on this. And not just any remake, guys. This is a full-blown... They didn't just up the resolution and increase the textures. No, guys, they from the ground up, rebuilt this game in full-blown 2018 graphic fidelity. 3D worlds, character remodels. They even rescored everything in three-dimensional audio, and I know this due to other tragic circumstances that we'll cover in a moment. But that being said, the gameplay has been incredible. My brief experience, I did me and Nick did the one-shot demo, which they released a week prior to the game releasing. Kind of a unique situation on this, right, Nick? It was 30-minute time limit to get as far as you can or explore as much as you can. And then like
Inspector... And one shot at it.
And then like Inspector Gadget, this message will self-destruct. Poof. So, Nick, hot take from you first. How did you enjoy or not enjoy the demo?
I enjoyed it. I liked the cinematics in it. They were beautiful. I gotta honestly say some of the best looking zombies I've ever seen in a game.
Remarkable. Yes. Some stuff there.
You can actually see like the flesh like sloughing off their face.
It was gnarly, dude.
It was visceral. It was nice. Well, not nice, but you know what I mean.
It was pleasing to horror fans.
It was very Resident Evil, true to its form. Whereas everyone knows the painstakingly frustrating controls sometimes when it comes to Resident Evil. And there were still some of those mechanics there. But
yeah,
they weren't as bad as previous games.
Well, and this one was actually...
What? Go ahead.
I was just going to say this one was actually built off the same game engine that they utilized in the Resident Evil 7 release. So anyone that played Resident Evil 7 will see a lot of familiar imagery as far as like the quality of the environments and characters.
But there's one thing I got to say. That opening scene when he's driving into town makes me want to move to Raccoon City.
How so?
They were selling gas for $1.06 a gallon.
You're right. And I got to throw this out real quick. Quick shout out. Guys, our nerd host who cannot be here this evening, Matthew Johnson, is currently playing through the game, and we are uploading the walkthrough of this game through him on our YouTube channel. So go check that out. Part one is up now, and probably a couple more episodes will be up by the time you hear this. That was the first comment he made when he got into the character exploration part and he started walking around. The first comment he made was he walked over and saw the gas station price sign, and that was exactly what you just said. He was like, "Well, that is some cheap gas." Like, that was the first thing he says. You're right, dude. Anyway, that was funny.
And there's some little like surprise moments. They kind of changed a little bit of the aspect of the game where it even seems more of a survival horror than it was before.
Oh.
Like the amount of bullets are even more desperate. The amount of zombies coming at you is even more.
The need for precision shooting.
Yeah. No, and that when the one falls out of the ceiling, that got me. That got me.
Oh, the one hanging upside down?
Yeah.
That one surprised me initially. But you know what surprised me more and shouldn't have? Because I mean, I'm not familiar with the original game, but it was actually a callback scene to the original Resident Evil 2. It's the moment where a guy is hanging from the ceiling, but not upside down. Like his head's actually hooked through some metal, and the body's just hanging there. And I'm not stupid. I've played Outlast and a handful of other horror games, and I know that when you walk up to something, something will most likely move or happen. And I still, like, literally, I've got it on. I've recorded it. I have the reaction still. I literally, like, almost screamed like a little freaking girl when I walked up to the corpse that was hanging there, and of course something it was gonna drop. I walk up to it, and that activated the corpse falling down to the ground, and it didn't come after me, but just it falling and the audio, the music coming with it, just that whole, you know, that sudden, you know, that like sharp little metallic sound when something lands or hits suddenly. So this game did not forego the cliche jump scare moments. And I was still caught off guard, even though I knew they were coming.
It's kind of cool that you'd bring up the noise and stuff. The sound effects of this game were actually more intense to me in contrast to the old game than the actual graphics were. The time and detail they took into making the sound effects on this. Like, when you shoot a zombie, you hear the squidge of the bullet.
Mm-hmm. And I don't have a good surround sound system, but I did gotta throw this out there. Mainly because it was a okay, let's just put this out there. Like, okay, general thoughts on let's give a quick general rating of the demo. The game's already out, but, like, overall, like, how much did you like it? I guess, like, you're just your general rating of it. Like,
we doing a 1 out of 10, or are we doing the 4?
You hate it. Try it. Like, it's worth giving it a try at least. You liked it, meaning it's more than worth your time, and loved it. You absolutely need to play this.
I liked it, almost loved it, like my first prom date.
Woo. Right there in the middle of really good. Okay.
There were some things that made it kind of shaky for me, but I'm pretty sure the whole game will make up the difference there. It's just there were some things I couldn't figure out that were with the time frame you didn't have a chance to.
Okay. Yeah. So in context of the demo, there were some restrictions there. So The demo as a whole, though, you will say you liked it. The game might get higher praises than that from you. Because with the time limit and the puzzle-solving thing. Because the Resident Evil series is known for puzzles. And my time in the demo, Nick, I'll be honest, like, I'm glad they have a map system for this game. Because for sure, there's a handful of times you're going back and forth to the same areas. And you're like, crap, no, I've already been here. And thankfully, they do have a really good map system where, you know, it indicates areas you're still searching and areas you've already cleared. And it even shows you, like, if you walk into a room, pass by an item and don't see it, you look at the map, it'll show you the item that you didn't pick up. It'll indicate items you didn't pick up. So it's very intuitive and it's good, you know, so it's very helpful. So your rating is purely based on
what I was able to find.
The challenge is a little harder than the amount of time you're allowed to play it.
Yeah. Well, and you said you didn't have surround sound and all this, but my headset, I can actually put this in 7.1 digital audio.
Okay. So real quick, you give your rating. I'll give mine. I would say as far as the demo goes, I'll give you the exact same rating. I liked it a lot. It is 100% worth playing. And I do have some time in the actual game. But so that being said, I just wanted to give everyone context of we really like this game. But I wanted to cover just a quick frustration I did have with it. that I could not find an answer to online. And so I'm just putting this out there because maybe we're the only people that know the solution to this. And maybe there's a random person like me that's struggling with it and doesn't know how to fix it. So the struggle I experienced, guys, because I looked all over the internet, nothing, no one else that I could find had a solution for the remake of this game. And I will give props. I gotta give props to two of you guys because so here's the problem. The problem was I have my Xbox One plugged into several different TVs. The headset, I could always hear all the audio perfectly fine. These headsets, just like Nick's, are designed for surround sound. The one thing that I don't know how it happened or why it happened, but when I played the game and I didn't have a headset, I just wanted to record the footage and I just wanted to hear the audio from the TV. All the other sound came through fine, except the character dialogue. The audible talking of the characters was either completely muffled or completely silent. And the only way I could hear or know what characters were saying is by having the subtitles on. So I tried a bunch of different things. Nothing worked. And what ended up happening and what like Nick was kind of guiding me to try this out on the Xbox internal settings. And then Matt explained to me why he thought I should check out the internal Xbox settings is because Capcom really put a lot of legwork into the 3D audio of this game. Like, they really want you to hear this in surround sound, whether it's through headphones or with a home entertainment system where you have either 5.1 or 7.1 speakers. Guys, thing is I don't have surround sound. And I don't imagine like the average gamer does unless you've got headsets that do that. So to me, I thought, well, why is this a problem? Why can't I hear the character dialogue? And I tried several other games. No other games were having an issue, just this one game. So I don't know if the game changed the setting on my Xbox, but the solution ended up being going into my Xbox settings. I looked at the audio outputs in my Xbox settings, under the HDMI category that the Xbox is plugged into from my Xbox to my TV, under the HDMI setting, there are audio options, either Dolby Atmos, 7.1 surround sound, or traditional stereo output. And I didn't think I needed to change it because I didn't need to change it for any other game. So guess what, guys? I went ahead and tried it. I switched it from it looked like it was default set to 7.1. I didn't do that. I feel like I don't know if the game did it or if that's just the default on the Xbox. I switched it to stereo. Boom. Instant fix. I booted up the game. All the characters' dialogue can be heard through the TV speakers like normal. Don't know why that was an issue. Don't know why it was a struggle. So if anyone out there, the random small percentage in the world that maybe had the same problem, just go into your Xbox settings and adjust your direct audio output and put it back to stereo if you don't have surround sound. Because for this one particular game, that is a huge focus, is just the 3D sound. Like me and Nick were talking about, Resident Evil 2, the remake, put a lot into the audio for this game. And the cool thing is in the game, you can actually go back and switch it to the original sound. You can either play the new sound or go back to the 1998 classic sound, which includes the classic gun sound effects, the classic original score, because they re-recorded the music audio for the remake, so you can actually go back to the classic 1998 audio of the game with the new graphics and play through it, and kind of nice little nostalgia kickback on that, which I thought was cool. Anyway, sorry, that was, I could have shortened that a little bit.
That's fine.
It was a little long-winded, but.
I was going to say, though, I looked at it kind of as a whole of what I saw. The graphics were great. The in-game graphics were great. Changing it to a third person over the shoulder all the time relieved some of the clunkiness.
You mean versus the 98, like, fixed perspective?
Yeah. Camera up here looking this way, you got to go down the back and then you turn just slightly and you're automatically going back the other way. You're like, crap. Yeah, no, third person made it a lot easier. But like I said, the sounds were very important to me, because I played it with headphones in the dark by myself, so those jump when you have the headphones with the surround sound on, you hear like something behind you, like right here. It's just the grunting of the zombie getting closer. You're like,
yeah.
And I always like that in the games when they actually get the surround sound right, because the speaker actually articulates different parts in your ear, and it's just like, yes. There was a few things I missed, and I think they need to be pointed out. Mainly the opening of the game. My biggest gripe right now, I don't know why they didn't leave it in there. It was a remake of it. Do you remember in the original Resident Evil 2? You start it up. You turn on the system. The game loads through the Sony intro. And then all of a sudden, Resident Evil loads up. And you hear the voice, Resident Evil.
Guess what, Nick? It's in there.
I didn't hear it.
It's in the full version of the game, not the demo.
Okay.
I'm just giving you a heads up. Like, we're reviewing the demo. The full version of the game is out. So if there's any particular gripes, throw it out here now. And I'll tell you, I've played the first hour of the full version of the game. The demo starts you off in the Raccoon Police Department. And although that's an iconic spot to be in, the full version of the game does start you out in the streets, walking through fire, flame, and zombies before you get to the front doors of the police department. Then you're in the police department. As far as, like, yeah, the Resident Evil thing, I didn't hear it in the demo until I played the full version. And when you hit start on the title screen, yeah, the classic voice, Resident Evil, comes out. It's all there, dude.
I was also looking for the giant spiders. I couldn't find them.
That might be later in the game. I haven't come across them yet. And I know they weren't in the demo.
Len knows what I'm talking about. So. Len knows what I'm talking about.
Yeah, they're the Resident Evil 2 equivalent of the dogs.
Yeah. No, there's certain things I look for in the game that they did. They paid a big point to focus on in the original that I was trying to see if they actually did in the second one. But they got the scare jumps, the liquor that went across the window.
The thing that... It's, I don't know, have you seen the side-by-side comparisons?
I have.
Yes, same here.
The thing that I love is, for the most part, they follow, like, if you watch the side-by-sides, they follow it pretty closely, and they show you all of the graphic and sound upgrades. Like, they'll play the audio for the base game first, and then they'll do the, you know, where it's split screen and it's got both images, and it'll play the audio for the left side, and then it'll play the audio for the remake, and it just sounds and looks so much more fantastic.
It is, dude. It is. When you get some freed up time, you definitely got to try it out at some point. It is really cool.
Well, since I don't have the full version yet, I actually already fired up the original on my PlayStation.
Nice. Very nice. Well, guys, I guess that's it. That's our spiel on Resident Evil 2, the remake, 2019. Granted, Matt's not here. He's extensively playing that game right now. So, again, just a quick plug, go to our YouTube channel, Nerdentials, and we will have several episodes of playthroughs of that game provided by your nerd host, Matthew Johnson. So that being said, we'll get his review and thoughts next week. But let's move on to our next topic. It's kind of a toss up. Both games are kind of big news, so to speak, as far as what's gone down and what's happening and what might happen. So I guess I want to get a quick recap from a host that we did not have with us last time me and Nick talked about this. And I want to get his quick opinion on the state of the game currently, since he is very current with said game. So, Lynn, we are talking Destiny 2.
Yep.
And first thoughts, though, before you jump into the state of the game itself, I want to get your quick hot take of how you feel about this and what you hope comes out of it regarding the Bungie-Activision split. And before you answer, were you able to listen to our thoughts prior?
No, I didn't. I haven't gotten a chance to hear your thoughts.
That's fine.
What was the brief of it? What was your quick take? Like a brief of your quick take and then a brief of Nick's quick take.
Okay, no, I guess that's okay. I guess, yeah, if you guys out there, listeners, did not listen to our mine and Nick's mini-cast on the Bungie-Activision split, which is we just spent an entire episode covering just that and our thoughts, we'll make quick summaries, Nick, if you're down, so that way Lynn has a little bit of a platform to jump off of. So basically, let's see, the short of it, I guess, is for me, I am hopeful purely for a couple reasons. Okay, so Bungie was actually celebrating the announcement of this split over social media with the expression, and I don't doubt for a second that they didn't actually pop bottles of champagne, at least in their Twitter statements, when the announcement was officialized and publicized. And that told me one of a couple things. So first off, one, just to get this out of the way, regardless of how much disdain we've had for a lot of the corporate-based decisions that Activision has made, that may have in many ways affected what has come out of Destiny from a development standpoint, the one thing we can't deny is that Activision knows how to spend money and knows how to market, and that was kind of one of the biggest benefits that Bungie had partnering with them, is the ability to have a company that knows how to push their product out, you know, in big marketplaces, how to put out displays, how to advertise the crap out of it, and they had the money to do that, and to get it physical copies in stores. So that was the thing that Activision offered up. Me and Nick both kind of shared that understanding. We're like, yep. I mean, regardless of... So on the negative side of Activision, let's jump to that real quick. The things that we all saw as a group was, okay, their Bungie is kind of being pushed to get a release schedule put out because Activision being a corporate business, the difference between Bungie and Activision is Bungie's in it to make a game for gamers and Activision's in it to sell games. They don't care about the specifics of making it for the gamer or not. They want to make the big bucks. So me and Nick kind of both shared that.
What's that?
And Nick, you stop me if I'm talking over anything that you didn't agree with. But as far as Bungie's concerned, so we that's it for Activision. We both kind of agreed on those points.
Okay.
As far as Bungie's concerned, let me just conclude. We are conservatively worried that Bungie is able to find an appropriate way to do this independently as far as releasing the game. But as far as the quality of the game, we are very hopeful and excited because the ball's in their park and it's their property and the developers are very passionate about said property. And they are very much gamers making a game for gamers. So, Nick, any disagreements or agreements?
I'm actually not worried about them being able to produce and send out their games. They may not have the knowledge behind doing it, and that's why they paired with Activision first. But if they run into that issue, they have plenty of people already reaching out saying, hey, come work with us.
Yeah, and one last side note before I throw it over to you, Lynn, is me and Nick did cover a little bit of that, how Sony heads were kind of tweeting out to Bungie in different ways. And Phil Spencer, we definitely covered specifically, Phil Spencer commented directly, just kind of, he was very, like, not specific about it, but in his tweet he said, looking forward to working with my favorite company from, or with my favorite, yeah, developer, and seeing the future of my favorite game, because you probably know this, Phil Spencer is a hardcore Destiny fan, and he's put hundreds of hours into the game himself, and me and Nick agreed, that was kind of a lot of people's just kind of like a shout out over the bow, kind of like saying, hey, Bungie, just letting you know,
you can always come home.
And here's the thing. We pointed out Phil Spencer was not president of the gaming division in Xbox back when Bungie was locked into a contract with Microsoft. Back when Microsoft owned Halo,
yeah,
and they were a first party with them, Phil Spencer wasn't in charge. So this, we agreed, this was kind of just a Phil Spencer's way of saying, hey, you know, we've invested in 13 other developers and we're not forcing them to put out a specific development schedule. They're trying to develop first-party shit. They're trying to build up their Game Pass division. So they're basically just saying, hey, Bungie, you know, if you need some help distributing, you know, let's talk. And that's it. That's basically what we covered. So, your opinions, thoughts, and hopes of this split.
I would like to start by saying it is a double-edged sword.
Yeah.
Okay. And here is my reasoning. Albeit Activision stifled them greatly, I feel, by first forcing them to start over when they had a foundation built coming off of Destiny 1 hard. They had a hard foundation. They knew where Destiny 1 succeeded. They knew where Destiny 1 failed. They came into Destiny 2 knowing that knowledge and then had to start completely from scratch, which story-wise did not hurt them, but mid to late game-wise, it killed them. Okay, and they saw that. They tried to recoup. They recouped in Forsaken, but it took them a while, and it really sucks that it took, you know, another Taken King to bring that back. Okay, but you know, seeing Destiny or Bungie has that creative capability and the fact that they do listen to their player base and their fans, and they do actually take in a lot of fan-based lore and creative content. It's kind of awesome. They do procrastinate very hard. And they have a coding and script that is not UI or coding friendly. It takes them a while to put little changes into the game that other games would be able to push out in a day or two. It takes them more like a week to push it out, which kind of sucks. You know, like Blizzard could push a patch out for WoW in a day and have it up before like 3 or 4 p.m. Whereas Bungie, you got to wait till next reset for that update or that fix to come through. Just because of how much coding and how hard it is for their process to go through. Activision was that push behind them to get it out, to get a deadline, you know, to make something to the fan or player base saying, hey, this is going to be here this day. That's what you got from Activision being there. Whereas Bungie is, you know, they're dead set on their fans, their player base, which is awesome. But the thing that they lack is their time frame or their schedule to guarantee it to the player base. Like, you'll look at their calendar for this week at Bungie, and you'll see things on there. And then next week, it comes around, and that thing has been removed from the this week at Bungie calendar, and you're like, oh, shoot. Like, what was it, Mods 2.0? That got pushed back, I don't know, what, 4 or 5 weeks? Like, it kept getting pushed back and pushed back and pushed back and pushed back. But Activision, like, stayed on them to make sure that they got that deadline hit, you know? You know, they go, you're going to make this promise to our fans and our customers. Activision goes, we're in it for the money, and if that fan or player base doesn't see that, they're not going to be happy. They're not going to make their microtransactions. We're not going to see that money, and things are going to start to decline and yada yada. Activision is very business oriented, which is what, you know, they are. And that's why I think Bungie paired with them was because, you know, like you said, they're the marketing background to Bungie, the promotion, the advertisement, all that, the getting the face out there, getting the product pushed. But, you know, with what Bungie's built, not just with Destiny, but with Halo, there's that, you know, that unspoken thing there, like you're saying, where they have other sources in other areas that can help with that, not necessarily one company stand alone. They could reach out to those multiple sources to assist them in that, because I don't know any more to segregate yourself to one console, whether it be Sony, whether it be Xbox, whether it be Nintendo. Not a whole lot of people do that, but to segregate yourself to one thing is kind of shooting yourself in the foot, especially with an MMO or a online game. You know, to segregate yourself to one console anymore with that type of game kind of stifles your opportunity. And I think that's why Activision sought after Blizzard for the PC, you know, aspect of that. And it reached out to another venture or another, you know, line where they, in, you know, in the future, that line is now open where they wouldn't, you know, necessarily had that before, just being on, you know, like if Halo had hardcore online PC multiplayer, that would be killer, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Like I know a lot of people that would kill for like Halo 5 on PC, because just for that sheer mouse and keyboard, it's a whole lot more enjoyable experience as a first person shooter on a PC. I'm not gonna knock that. Playing first person shooters on PC is way more fun, but the split all together, I view it as Bungie will now have that creative control, that vision that they had coming out of Destiny 1 going into Destiny 2. They will have that vision there, and they will actually be able to pursue it and now fully immerse their audience in the lore, in the storyline, in what the game was meant to be there for. And not just push out Warmind or Osiris DLCs.
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of painful, because those were things that felt like they should have been in base D2 to begin with how honestly how piss poor they were. And, you know, coming into the newer DLCs that we're right now with the forges, the Black Armory, the DLC is, I don't know, if you paid for it after the pass, I feel sorry because it's kind of lackluster. I mean, yeah, you get the opportunity at 3D exotics, and there was a puzzle put into the game that nobody could solve, so they had to give it to everybody, which kind of sucks. But you know, the heart was there. You know, you saw it with how challenging the puzzle was. I honestly enjoy those puzzles, the difficult ones, but the fact that they had to give it to people because it was
Just
more of the player base has become casual.
I mean, just to add to that, as far as like the explanation of it for those not in the know on our show is, you know, Bungie listened as far as they made a puzzle really challenging because a lot of the player base wanted more of that. And it's really unfortunate, and maybe it's attributed to the need to, like, they needed to release it on a time schedule, so they didn't have enough of the testers. It's kind of up in the air as to whose fault it really is, but there was a missing piece of evidence in the quest that was actually literally not in the game, to where a couple of really huge streamers spent 30 hours straight with the community, with a bunch of people, you know, trying to help those streamers solve the puzzle. And they still couldn't, up until, like, I mean, eventually as a group effort, the puzzle was solved, but it was by finding an outside source that wasn't in the game, you know?
It was after the fact that they'd already released, like, they already opened up the armory, and that when, I can't remember if it was Glad or Datto that had found it out, but one of the two of them.
What I'm saying is they found it out by trial and error, purely by trial and error, because the clue, quote unquote clue, that was supposed to help them get to that point, get to the solution, was left out of the game. And like the biggest controversy on that whole thing was, like, people are asking the question, did Bungie not have any of the game testers play through this quest and realize that it's unsolvable before releasing it? Like, that is a very heated, like, why did this go so wrong? And the only thing Bungie could think of to fix it was to, open up the fourth forge, which was, these were all, and Nick, Nick, who's not caught up on what the forges were, like, once a week, a new forge opened up through quest lines and stuff, and this fourth forge was not announced. It was supposed to be a secret that was supposed to be revealed after the puzzle was solved, but because no one could solve the puzzle, and because the way Bungie announced what this content was, the biggest reason people were pissed off at Bungie is because they revealed that there was a forge that was going to be unlocked by solving the puzzle. Now, a lot of people agree, and you may disagree, but if Bungie had just kept the forge a secret, like, completely, don't tell anyone that's what's locked behind this puzzle, and they just let the community try to solve the puzzle, then the reveal of there being the fourth forge would not have been, people wouldn't have been pissed off about it. They would have been like, oh, wow, a surprise. But because they knew content was locked behind an impossible puzzle, it made the fan base upset.
Yeah, I feel like that's part of that double-edged sword of Activision and Bungie, was that Activision wanted to keep that player base playing, And to keep that player base playing, they had Bungie tweet out, "Hey, there's a fourth Forge coming, and it's a
like
mystery."
Like the teaser to tease the community. Yeah.
To get them to look for it. And then when they couldn't solve the puzzle because Bungie put all that effort into making it, you know, difficult.
A challenging puzzle.
Yeah. That it, I don't know, it came around. And I think
the reception was soured because of how it was delivered.
Yeah, and it a lot of people want to be just upset at Bungie over it, but you have to remember that there's always two sides to every story. There's always two sides to every argument, that you can't just go off one, that there's always more to it than that. That
and especially in game development, the two-edged sword is the publisher versus the developer.
And it... Go for it, Nick.
Do you guys know who Vicarious Visions and High Noon Moon Studios is?
Yeah, they're owned by Activision. Yep.
Okay. Do you know what part they played in Destiny 2?
Yep.
PC.
No, they did more than that. They helped.
One of them did DC. One of them did the PC development for the port, and the other one did the entire Warmind DLC.
Because they were worried that the main dev team wouldn't be able to keep up with the amount of drops that they needed.
Again, all forced by Activision, as far as the timeline and how much Activision expected of them.
Now, I'm wondering, will Bungie be smart and think, you know what, that worked well to bring someone in to help with content? Would that be a good idea to reach out and try to get help with that too?
My personal hot take is they don't need it, because the only reason they needed it was because there were stakeholders and investors expecting Bungie to pump out money for them.
I am so glad you brought that up. You know what? But you know what Activision's going through right now, right?
Oh yeah, they're getting sued out in the shit can. They're in the shit can across multiple companies and lawsuits right now, and their stocks are really low right now.
Investors are thinking that Activision lied about the future of Destiny 2, and investors got cheated out when Activision knew that there was going to be a split.
Well, all I can say is good luck to Activision, and right now it's not Bungie's problem.
Oh yeah, I just think it's hilarious.
Well, it's very... to Nick's question though, where do you think they need it? Maybe that is a moment where Bungie might have saw a weak link in the chain and might hire on more staff to compensate for those two, you know, Vicarious Visions loss and then the other company's loss. Like maybe bring on a few extra devs as opposed to just, you know, go, oh, hey, we're going to outsource it and bring in another company. Maybe bring on actual people onto the team.
Like, I mean, possibly.
Not two full companies worth of staff. Like just, you know, a handful of people to compensate for those two companies moving on.
Well, let's not go too much further down the rabbit hole on this, but I've got a couple things just to throw at you guys to kind of help us wrap up the Destiny topic. One being, as far as to throw you guys out a few bones on the possibilities going forward. Let's not forget, granted, a completely unique IP, quote unquote, that's what was posted in the media regarding the NetEase $100 million investment from China. But there's that was speculated in the past that when they were going to develop another IP through an additional investment, that hey, this might be a window leading to Bungie being able to self-develop, self-publish, become the next Blizzard platform, because honestly, that's what Bungie has stated in the media, is they want to work towards becoming a multi-IP, multi-studio-sized production company at some point. Yep. And this NetEase might be a window to that, Some people are speculating. There's nothing official. Like, we don't know. All we can do is speculate. But there is $100 million on the table. We don't know how much of that is going into an actual full-blown separate IP. We don't know if any of that is going to trickle into supporting Destiny. We everything's up in the air right now. There's a lot of room for speculation.
What about the devs that were pulled off of D2 expansion content and moved over to D3 production?
Right. I think it's still all speculative because here's the thing. Here's what we do know is that
they kept them on D3, or do you think they moved when they split off Activision that they
now, here's my point.
Moved
yes.
back to D2?
I don't. Now that no, very good. Yes, sorry, not to talk over you. Very good point, Lynn. We don't know if they're going to stick with a D3 iteration or if they're getting pulled off completely, because here's the thing. The contract got cut, and they have told us over media that they're going to cover, nothing's going to change up to the end of the current roadmap, meaning the annual pass, like Penumbra, Year of the Drifter, or whatever, the Joker's Wild. The next, going up through this coming September, that roadmap is not changing. D2 being available on the Blizzard Battle Network, Battle.net, is going to stay there for the foreseeable future as far as the sale of Destiny 2 for the PC community. So Bungie has stated on their Twitter accounts, the roadmap isn't changing as it currently stands. So like, they're finishing out what they've already promised. As far as beyond that, are we going to get a D2 fall expansion? Maybe. Are they going to abandon the number 3 and go for a full-blown MMO in their third iteration and call it Destiny ? And are they going to get rid of the number? Because the numbering system only existed because that was the contract with Activision. They promised Activision 4 games. In the 10-year contract, they promised 4 games. And because of delays, we're way too close to the end of that contract to have put out a fourth Destiny game.
Well, delays and like, restarts.
Exactly, yeah. Like, to your point, what you said earlier about them restarting and having to transition and being delayed. They were supposed to have four Destiny.
They lost the original director from D1.
Right. They were supposed to have 4 Destiny games over 10 years. And they weren't even close to coming out with a fourth Destiny, let alone D3.
Which I'm glad.
I'm glad too. And like, their whole vision before joining with Activision was they wanted to make an MMO shooter. But when they hooked up with Activision, Activision's like, okay, we need sequels. We want tried and true release schedule like our tried and true Call of Duty series that they rely on so much. Activision wanted Destiny to be a Call of Duty, buy the books, every 2 to 3 years, new title, boom, boom, boom.
If we're asking the question, do we think Destiny will make it through this split? My answer's got to be yes, just for the sheer fact. I don't know if you guys remember this or remember these numbers. Destiny, on its release day, has still the record for the highest selling new IP on its first day. It opened up at 500 million on the first day.
What are you talking about? 500 million dollars
sales
or
of
player?
Games.
Okay, sales is more believable. I was like, yeah, I got you. Because $60 a title, yeah,
500 okay. million in one day.
I was one of those dirty buyers on release, well, pre-order and release. I almost missed.
Yeah.
So that's, yeah, you that's were. Intense.
Yeah. I mean, they hyped it up for almost 4 years prior to release.
I pre-ordered this game 2 years before it came out.
Yeah, because it was supposed to come out 2013, and then it got pushed back a whole year.
I was a Bungie fanboy from day one with Halo, and then they kind of stopped doing that, and I'm like, what are they going to do next? And then I just saw the poster with the Traveler, and I'm like, I don't know what that is. It's going to be epic. It's going to be epic.
Dude, switching over to PlayStation and seeing that Bungie was available on PlayStation, you have no idea. this original Halo fanboy was excited for having a Bungie IP on PlayStation.
on a finalizing note, two little things I wanted to throw at you, Lynn.
Join Xbox.
I don't care. Cross play, cross save. They're not tied to a developer. I don't care if they stay on PlayStation. If I can play with my buddy on PlayStation, by all means, come on, Bungie, let's do it. Secondly, though, for the PC community, they could really kind of go anywhere. Like, Epic recently bought up, and we mentioned this last time, me and Nick did, they recently did a contract with Ubisoft, so the PC side is going to get exclusive release for The Division 2. As far as where you're going to buy it, you know, whether it's on Steam or it's on the Epic Store, which is now competing with Steam, you know, Bungie might have some options as far as distribution goes. As far as console releases, the only reason I'm not worried, like, okay, they'll sell it on the online PlayStation Store and it'll be sold on the Microsoft Online Store. But as far as, like, potential deals and support that they might get, the reason I think this would still benefit you, Lynn, is if they got on the phone with Phil Spencer and worked out some kind of deal, I think you would still benefit from it, because Phil Spencer, he already has an elite group of 13 studios under the Microsoft belt to create first-party content. I think at the very least, and he's also not above publishing on other platforms and crossplay. He is 100% on board with crossplay, on board with... They bought up Minecraft, and he continues selling it on the PlayStation. Yeah, it's a first-party property.
They were pushing for it on fucking Twitter, saying, at Sony, where you at?
Right? All I'm saying is, like, I mean, it wouldn't... This part wouldn't apply to you, but, like, my dream situation is... Phil cozies up next to Bungie and says, "Hey, here's a truckload of money. Make the best Destiny you can make, and let's do crossplay. Because, like, I mean, it doesn't matter. They're gonna he's not gonna do exclusivity with Bungie, even if they did work out a deal. Is my point? Because he doesn't like exclusivity anyway right now." As far as, like, multi-platform games go, Bungie's already a multi-platform game, so he's not going to be like, oh, well, now we get content for a whole year and screw you guys. He would not, you know, do that, but at the very least, you'd get a really good supportive guy because he freaking loves the game. I don't know. Anyway, we're all kind of talking in circles right now, but did you... We're kind of covering a lot of similar ground we already did in a previous episode, but Lynn, any concluding thoughts before we kind of do our wrap-up topic?
Well, I mean, did you want to do state of the game, or do you want to even touch on that?
Can you keep it, like, hot and short as far as where you're at, as far as how you feel about the game? Are you enjoying where it's currently at, kind of thing? You know what I mean? Like... Without going in depth, because we can do it on we can do it next week or in another episode. We do need to get back to Nerds of Destiny and do a recap episode for that podcast.
I could talk your ear off for probably 2 hours, but I can keep state of the game short.
Okay, give us the state of the game as it is now.
So, if you are behind. Like, under light level, haven't done the new forges or any of that, there's plenty in the game to do. If you're all caught up and you're current with the forges and you're 650 light, there's not a whole lot for you right now. But...
Dang.
But come the week that I will be visiting you, the...
Oh, snap.
The Crimson Days event drops, and the Super Changes comes out as well. They are buffing all of the supers, with the exception of Blade Barrage and Void Warp. Blade Barrage is...
I know Blade Barrage because right now it's super OP.
Yeah, it's getting nerfed, and Nova Warp is getting nerfed as well. But that's just for damage resistance on Nova Warp. But
it sucks. It sucks because I don't have Blade Barrage yet.
Darn.
I always miss out on the OP shit before they nerf it. Damn it.
One of the ones we should have got. But right now, there's not a whole lot to do. I am excited for Joker's Wild. I'm hoping that they take everything that the community has suggested as far as Gambit changes or Gambit updates into consideration and make those changes. Other than that, hashtag bring back Eris Moon for Penumbrum.
Yeah, that would be sick, bro. I'm on board with that. Yes.
I miss that blind hive lady.
Well, we got Joker's Wild, and is there one more? Is Penumbra the next after that?
After that is Penumbra. And they said that.
And right now it's redacted on the roadmap for some reason. Like, they're keeping the name, you know, hidden, even though we know early on it was Penumbra.
They might change it. Who knows? They might actually put a hardcore storyline into it, because originally they wanted it just to be hidden content that you had to go out and find as a community. That's what they wanted Penumbrum to be originally, was stuff hidden that you had to go find. But I think they saw how well that worked for the Forge, and how people didn't like the lack of storyline. And so they might be actually throwing in a storyline to go with Penumbrum and hidden content in addition to it, which would be kind of nice. I mean, I'm not going to say...
I'm down with all of that,
I'm not going to say 100% that there's going to be storyline. Don't quote me on it. It'd be nice if there was storyline. That's all I'm saying. And state of the game.
Mm-hmm. Damn. Very also, nice. Hot and quick. Also, we could dive in deeper for sure. Go ahead.
Hashtag screw the Yoten.
Say that again?
Hashtag screw the Yoten. It's an exotic fusion rifle that you can get that in PvP it one-shots people.
I heard you talking about it on the Discord. Ah, man. Or mentioning it on the Discord. Well, guys, we're going to make this last topic a bit shorter because I plan on diving deeper on the following weekend when the demo... which really should be called the beta, and we'll discuss why in a moment. But the demo of said game is going to be completely public this coming weekend. That game is BioWare's new IP that they've been in development with since they finished Mass Effect 3 almost 6 years ago. Is the open shared world shooter multiplayer RPG game known as Anthem. Now, just to give a quick recap of what we saw about it leading up to this demo that came out a couple days ago prior to this recording. We were recording Sunday night right now, so the demo just finished for those that were able to get into it, and I'll explain why why that is a situation. Back in E3 2017, E3 2017, we got a teaser glimpse of just the title Anthem, and just a glimpse of this really cool looking exosuit that was almost on par with what might have been an Iron Man suit or something, and it looked interesting, and there was a lot of speculation. Then over the following months, we got more knowledge about what Anthem was, And we found out it's going to be a looter shooter. Okay, a looter shooter created by BioWare. It's going to be a games as service. Okay. And then we find out, well, the OnePlus was like, well, it's BioWare, and they claim they're shooting for a deep storyline that's rooted in RPG, and that's what BioWare is known for. And for the long short of it, those that aren't in the know, BioWare is responsible for games such as Dragon Age, the Mass Effect series, Knights of the Old Republic, Baldur's Gate, a top-down isometric RPG series back in the late 90s on PC. Yeah, I'm a hardcore BioWare fan, guys.
They also did Empire.
And yes, Jade Empire on the original Xbox. I know, shout out to Lynn. He really enjoyed Jade Empire. And that brings us up to this now new IP. And don't forget, guys, BioWare is kind of a multi-team studio. They're big enough now where they're usually working on two IPs in tandem with each other. Right now, Dragon Age 4 is in development currently, while the main studio at BioWare is currently wrapping up and trying to polish and bug fix the what remains of Anthem prior to its full release in February 22nd. So that brings us up to today, where this weekend, prior to recording, they released a VIP access only demo of the game. It's a slice of life section of the game. It's not a beta, so most people go in with the perception of it being a demo. It should be a really clean, fully polished portion of the game that just gives you like the best experience possible. That's what a demo is supposed to be, Lynn, and you're shaking your head no because of what we're about to discuss as to how it was not what a demo should be and should have just been called a beta. But BioWare is not super familiar with the MMO shared world universe. They are most known for complete single player storylines where they have enough time to completely polish a game prior to release, Andromeda being the only exception to that. And I would like to just quickly point out, regarding Mass Effect Andromeda, that was created by a secondary studio within the BioWare mainframe. And a lot of people don't know this. The biggest reason it suffered so many glitches is it was created from the ground up under the Unreal Engine. And then, like our so similar to our Activision publisher cohort that likes to screw developers over and ask them to change things last minute, they asked the Andromeda team, that's right, EA Games, asked BioWare, working on Andromeda, to, hey, we want you to use the Frostbite engine. And the Andromeda team had never used Frostbite before. And this is 18 months before the release of the game. They asked the Andromeda team to move every asset over from the Unreal Engine into Frostbite. Some of you guys didn't know this. I just learned this last week that is why Andromeda suffered so horribly. EA, as a publisher, forced them to push the game out at a set date and said, we want you to use a different engine.
So lesson learned is publishers, keep your damn dirty paws out of our games.
And stay away from developers and their creative abilities. Anyway, so long introduction, but shifting over to Anthem now. The plus side to Anthem, minus the current issues with the demo, the plus side is that this game, by the main Montreal group that were responsible for the complete development of Mass Effect 1 and 2, which are highly lauded in the saga of Mass Effect games and award-winning to boot, they're the ones responsible for the 6 years of Anthem development, and they built Anthem from the ground up using the Frostbite engine. I'm not saying I'm a fan of Frostbite over Unreal or anything. I'm not a tech guru regarding, you know, coding, scripting, and development, but I will say this. The one thing I can glean from this as a casual fan of the game and its development is at least EA is kind of leaving them alone in regards to, okay, they started on Frostbite. They're not forcing them to change it last minute, thank God. And so what we're left with is entirely just BioWare not being ready for an online-only game, I think is what this kind of comes down to. And regardless of how much you know about servers and development, I would say that right now they're doing their best to fix the crap that they weren't prepared for. And those not in the know, basically a massive, massive number of people could not even get into the demo when it went live this Friday. Lynn being one of those guys, he pre-ordered the damn game and still didn't get to play it at all this weekend, which is really heartbreaking for someone that was actually interested in doing this and actually putting money into it. I even put $5 into EA Access to get myself the VIP access, and I couldn't even play it the first day on Friday because servers were not loading. And they were saying, it's not that we weren't prepared for the server load, like how many players might come on. They were saying it was an issue with the game communicating with the various platforms. And they were having an issue there that didn't show up during playtesting, but it showed up now with all these, you know, out there players trying to get into this. So I'm not, from me not knowing anything about development, I can't argue or dispute that they're not in the wrong, or they are. And I'll let Nick say something here, because you had a point to make.
I have a piece of a blog here that Chad Robertson, the head of live service for BioWare's game, he wrote an extensive blog, and he actually outlines the three issues that happened.
Yeah, go ahead and read those out real quick.
Yeah, the three issues that most players were running into, according to post, were 1, platform connections. This was caused by spikes in players entering the game when they opened up. Unfortunately, these issues did not present themselves during our internal testing. Investigations are ongoing, and we will continue to apply fixes throughout the weekend. 2, entitlements. These are account flags that grant players things like their pre-order incentives and demo access. During the demo weekend, we identified a bug where VIP players with specific combination of entitlements were being blocked from accessing the demo.
Linen in this point.
We believe we've resolved most of these, but have additional causes we are addressing. And 3, infinite loads. This is one that Mr. Joe here experienced for quite a while. This is occurring for some players, particularly when they transition from Fort Tarsus to an expedition. Oh, you probably didn't get that part then. We saw this only in isolated cases during internal testing and believe it was resolved. Unfortunately, the problem is exacerbated in the real world, where differences with players' ISPs and home networks introduce new behaviors.
So just to add to that last point you made, Nick, I did experience that initially a handful of times. So Fort Tarsus, for you guys out there that haven't played this game yet, is basically like the tower in Destiny. It's the social space, more or less, where you're kind of free roaming. You can talk to your vendors, blah, blah, blah. And anytime the expedition is basically going to planet side to do a mission. So going from the tower to the planet side, it would go to load you into the game, and then it would just freeze at the last, I would say, 1/8 of the loading bar would just sit there, and it would freeze. It wouldn't go anywhere. You'd sit there for untold amounts of time. A couple people were able to bypass this by simply closing out the game completely manually, just like force closing the game, then relaunching the game. And there was a 50-50 chance for a lot of players that it would load you right where you left off and actually carry you onto the planet side. Other times, including myself, it would completely reset as if you had weren't even trying to load to begin with, and you'd have to start all over and hope the infinite load screen didn't happen. By mid-Saturday afternoon, so a day and a half into this demo, I was successfully able to do a couple missions smoothly without the infinite load screen. And, I mean, and that was about it. I didn't play any at all on Sunday today prior to this recording. But, needless to say, BioWare experienced a heavy hiccup in their VIP demo release. And next weekend, they're supposed to be opening it up. It's supposed to be completely a public open demo again for the following weekend. And the one prop I will give BioWare on this whole controversial thing, I'm a gamer that doesn't get angered that easily, and I kind of reserve judgment until I see how a developer is going to handle certain situations, especially negativity. And my basic response to them is appreciation for their attentiveness to tackling this problem, and what is the word? The word for being completely open to the community. What's that word? What's the phrasing? Transparency, guys. I would say this, that the one thing that BioWare, and it may half have been Bungie. The one thing that it might have been a little bit of Bungie's fault, maybe a little bit of Activision, maybe a combination of both. They were completely closed off to the community for the entirety of Destiny 1. I'm saying as far as how much they were communicating and telling you, hey, we're working on this. This is what's going on. This is what we're fixing. After Destiny 2, they became very open and very transparent. And I'm not, you know, it's, anyway, that's nitgrit little details. But the one thing I'm appreciating with BioWare is that they've seen what's happened with Bungie. They've seen the lashback, especially with their prior IP of Mass Effect Andromeda, and how much anger came out over the glitches in that game upon release. BioWare is very aware, and EA is definitely aware of how transparent BioWare needs to be, because EA has gotten some of the heaviest backlash this last year with the Star Wars franchise. We could talk about that next week. EA has suffered greatly with Star Wars Battleground and the loot box issue. EA knows, okay, the EA is probably encouraging BioWare, like, BioWare, you need to be transparent. You need to make sure the community is on board with you, because we need you to. EA needs BioWare to succeed as much as BioWare needs itself to succeed at this point. And so they're being very open and transparent with the community. It's still a damn shame that there was this big of a hiccup on their opening demo of the game. And for me, I can't speak on Lynn, so on Lynn's behalf, because Lynn missed out completely on it, so I'm going to ask him in a second. Me, I got to play it. It's not soup as buttery smooth as I hope it will be upon release, but the gameplay, BioWare nailed the loop. Those that don't know what the loop is the thing in a game like this, a game as a service, that keeps you hooked and wanting to keep playing. Whether it's the grind or it's a moment of gameplay that's super fun and addicting that you want to keep re-experiencing. I feel like this game, so far from what little I've gotten to experience, they definitely have a couple loops in this game that are promising if they can knock it out of the park next week and fix it so that everyone can get a try at it. So I'm still hopeful for it, even though I was frustrated with the demo. Lynn and Nick, I'm going to throw it over to you guys. Lynn, I've seen some facial reactions. I want to get your take on having had no access to the demo and where you're sitting at right now.
Well, I mean,
you can be perfectly honest about it, dude.
I will keep it short and say that this was a short preview. It will be available in the future for a preview before launch. I hope that I will be able to experience it. It sucks that I couldn't experience it, you know, putting the money into it for the pre-order. I mean, oh darn. I'll still get the little skins for the pre-order that you got. I mean, I'm not going to miss out on that. I just didn't get the preview. The preview content will not carry over, so I'm not worried about missing out there. I mean, I will start fresh like everyone else will start fresh, which will be nice.
Right.
So fresh, so clean. I mean, right? And come next, what is it, the 1st through the 3rd or the 1st through the 4th?
February, yeah.
Hopefully they'll have the bugs knocked out and I'll be able to experience it. I mean, I was able to live vicariously through others and their what they uploaded to the internet that I could see, and I still love it. I still love what I did see. So I'm hoping that I'll be able to experience it come next demo.
Optimistically hopeful.
Yeah. I mean, I still love it.
All right, fair enough. Nick, give us your lowdown of what you were able to play.
No. I got to play most of the demo. That's what it was.
Platforms and time frames. When were you able to jump in right away, and what did you play
on? I jumped in right after our recording on Friday. You guys started talking about it, and I remember I had started downloading it. But then I realized that when my wife left to go to work, she turned off my Xbox. And so you guys were talking about, I'm like, wait, I'm going to go check and see where it's at. I run back there and check my room. I'm like, damn it, it's off. So I turn it on, and by the time we were done with our recording, it was already downloaded. And everyone said there was this whole bunch of loading times to jump in. I started the game and jumped in, and it instantly loaded. So I didn't
run. What platform? What was your first one, Xbox? Yeah. Okay.
So I didn't run into the issues everyone else did. And I didn't pay the VIP money. I'm not an EA subscriber or the other one. I forget what it is. I didn't
Origin access on PC.
Yeah, I didn't pay for any of those. So I don't know how I got access to the VIP launch. But what?
Did you read somewhere that they opened it up? 'Cause
that was the thing. Everybody on my Discord, like everybody, well, on my clan Discord for my Destiny clan, was saying, oh, hey, we're hopping on Anthem to play it because everybody had access to it. Like,
so my question,
VIP or not?
Was it accidentally available for everyone?
That's what it looks like.
Or did they announce? Or did they announce that they were going to open it up? Because it sounds like there was so that brings up a little side note. We need to do a little more research, because my speculation on that is maybe there were so many server issues because it wasn't locked out to the community and they didn't realize that. Maybe the glitch was everyone had access unintentionally.
Well,
that's just speculation. I haven't read anything.
It was supposed to be everyone who bought the $80 version got VIP access for themselves and 3 keys, which they could distribute to 3 random people. That's how it was supposed to be. But the way that it seems was everyone could access it no matter whether they got a key or not.
We'll look into it and we'll follow up next week with what we find out. But I'm wondering if that was part of the issue, is that it was completely public and they did not intend for it to be.
Well, I almost wonder their way of resolving the lockouts for the people that had certain what they called entitlements
was entitlements to open in their accounts was to open it. Maybe
that might have been their response to try to make it so people can get through, and it just opened the floodgates for everyone.
Well, which probably created a snowball effect of issues at that point.
My thing is, was Saturday morning and all the way into Saturday evening, me and the boys kept trying to hop on to. I wanted to show it to Lincoln and Emmett because Robin and I were so excited for it. I still couldn't play it. Like, the card kept popping up on the screen saying that I didn't have access to it and I had to wait till the 1st and 3rd.
Huh.
But I paid for the VIP access, so I don't know what's going on there.
Right. Huh. We'll have to research it further.
And for a game that's been touted as the Destiny killer, I don't think there's an issue there. It not that it was a bad game. I got to reiterate this. Destiny and Anthem, they're both science fiction shooters. And that's it. That's all they have in common. Everything else is completely different. The third person shooting, the way the mechanics and the creatures are all like massive damage sponges.
Well, also the demo, they said the balancing of damage and weapon damage and enemy damage is all going to be different in the full release, they said. Well, so, I mean,
but there's a completely different feel to the games. Anthem shooting is completely different because the third person, you're taken out of that first person view, and a lot of that that immersion you get from being in a first person shooter's gone. And it takes that away. So it's two different games. One is almost like, this is a game I want to play just to relax and sit back, kill some monsters, and play with some friends. Destiny's like, hey, I'm going to jump on here and pwn some noobs. It's two different types of games.
Bottom line, I mean, there's aspects that are not in Anthem at all.
Yeah. I would honestly say that the only similarities is that it's a science fiction shooter. And that is, to me, the only similarities the games have. And the classes, sorry. But other than that, there's no similarity between the games. This game, if I had to compare it to another game, the most it was like, and the similarities were glaring, actually, Warframe.
Actually, people are chopping this up to being a mix of The Division and Warframe.
Yeah, this was like Warframe Extra to me.
From what I'd say is this felt like a combination of what Nick's saying is Warframe, what Joe said The Division, and then it has the clunkiness of Evolve.
that was a four player shooter that took down big monsters. So there's that.
I will say that it has the feel of Warframe with the space science fiction, and it has the play of
the mechanics of Division,
yeah. and it brought in the clunkiness and the difficulty of playing Evolve. But
I think that's a pretty good mix, yeah.
The one thing I wish that the Storm class would have had heavier was the space magic that Destiny has. I miss the space magic.
I mean, I agree with that, but I want to throw this out there. I don't know. It recently got tweeted earlier today, but they said, and I don't know if it's going to be to the whole public or just the VIP players, but they're claiming like to make up for this last weekend, aside from like a specific vinyl that they're going to issue to the VIP players, you know, woohoo. They're claiming all four javelins will be available immediately next weekend. Like there's no lock. There's nothing you have to unlock to get all four of them to try out. So they're saying next weekend, in the public open demo, all four javelins will be playable. So I look forward to trying that out because I only had time to play the Ranger. I didn't get far enough into it to unlock anyone else, unfortunately.
Hell yeah. I wanted to do the Storm and the Colossus. And now
same here.
I don't feel like
I feel I'm it,
one. Yes.
I feel like Interceptor is going to be closer to the Hunter as far as like that's what I'm used to. But
the Interceptor is going to be high burst DPS is what it is with the stealth abilities.
We'll save more details for next week because we'll probably dive into like the customizability, the play styles. We'll get a little more into what we do get to experience of the game, because there's a lot to unpack on it. The one thing I want to throw out there that I told Matt about this game, dude, that I'm excited about, is that with Destiny, where you have to pick one class and you have to stick with it and you have to open up multiple playthroughs as different classes, the difference with this game is you will start the game as one class and you will be able to play all of them throughout the entirety of your playthrough as one character.
Yeah, so like
you will, and they're just different suits. So they're saying you will be able to, from mission to mission, you'll be able to swap out into a different javelin at any time.
But once you get into those missions, you'll be locked in.
So like, unlike Destiny, where you're kind of locked to one class for the entirety of a playthrough, you'll be able to bounce throughout the entirety of Anthem. So that's pretty cool. And with perks and abilities, those are based on your Under Armour and don't affect the outward appearance. So like, so many people in Destiny are clamoring for transmogrification like Diablo 3. This game will let you change every single section of armor to be completely different from one another at any time. Literally, the cosmetics are going to be through the roof for this game. And the only thing that they're monetizing is if you want to get something sooner, you can pay for it immediately, but it's all cosmetic across the board. So you can grind to the ends of the earth to unlock everything that there is available, and it's a lot more like Halo 5 multiplayer, where you grind out points to unlock all the different armor sets you can get.
Grind to these hot content.
So, a lot of promising ideas. This was a lengthier episode, but we're going to wrap it up now, guys.
I got a wicked meat grinder. I will grind it all out.
I hope so.
Every time someone says grinder, I think it's just a massive sandwich, and it makes me hungry.
Oh, a meatball grinder. I could go for one of those. Yeah.
Well, on that note, guys, that's going to wrap up our Gaming Bits talk this week. Thank you for joining us. Guys, leave a comment down below if you're watching on YouTube. Rate and review us on iTunes or Google Play, guys. We could really use some star power ratings to get our show more exposed. We're on a weekly release now for podcasting. In the coming weeks, we'll try to give you guys a more steadier, day of the week release as soon as I can knock out that schedule. But check back every single week. We will have a new episode somewhere in the week on our podcast, guys. Guys, go to nerdentialsmedia.com to check out all our amazing content. YouTube, videos, podcasting, reviews, gameplay, let's plays. Another one last shout out to Matt Johnson. He is covering our Resident Evil 2 remake playthroughs. Part 1 is already up by the time you listen to this. Probably several more parts by the time you hear this podcast. Guys, thank you for listening. Thank you for joining us. This has been your Nerdy Essentials. For me, Nick, and Lynn, as always, nerds, we'll see you on the other side. I like that. I like that little dip, Lynn. That little dip up to the stars. It's so hot.
Call the police and fire, man.
Whoa.
Don't say fresh.